This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So welcome, John, to Jikoji.
Thank you.
And John is a chaplain at a prison near Stockton, and he's been sponsoring Con Rawls and me doing prison work there for, I don't know, 5 months, something like that now. And he leads the Native American practice there. And when I arrived, he started telling me about Buddhism and in ways that really opened my mind and my eyes to other aspects. And today we're going to have a conversation with John, and really appreciate you coming here from the Valley to speak to us, be with us, see Jikoji in this valley that Con can speak to this of the history of the valley, that about a mile down the old skyline dirt road and here in the valley is a meadow that was a village. For thousands of years, and mortars and flint pieces, and even a Clovis point have been found in the area, which indicates it goes back to the.
What's your estimate of years?
Well, 12,000-15,000 years. You know, that's when the mammoths and mastodons were around, and. The Clovis points were used for hunting them. Mm-hmm. And here we've been Jikoji for 40 years. So we're just a speck of dust on the timeline. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for, how would you say, asking me to come. It was that. I have no idea what we're going to do today, folks. But we're going to talk, that's for sure. If you have any questions about Native people or life way or whatever you want to think of it as, I'm welcome to hear them, and I'll give you the best answer I can give you from my own experiences being born here in this area too. I was born in Los Angeles, but I was raised in the Bay Area, so that's kind of... it's a nice journey back home, kind of, for me. For me, this is a nice country, nice place. But for us, we believe that all four nations came together to make our nation, the Red People. So you can look back in history books and things to see if you can draw all those lines together. But we believe we're island people. And even the Vikings came and generously donated their DNA to us as well. And let's see, the Asian folks as well. We believe that they came across the bridge way back. And so we're all mixed together here. But we've kind of been seen as not equal to maybe the other races on the earth at this time. You know, we were always protesting about accountability, responsibility, how people have to be in a moral, ethical way to live together as roommates, I guess you'd say, on the earth, you know, all of us being accountable for our actions, so to speak, but looking for some kind of inner understanding of where you stand in relationship to everything else.
So can we stop thing. For a second and just maybe we switch the mic to this? Make sure everybody's
too close.
Okay, can everybody
hear? Okay. Can you guys hear us?
Yeah.
Right. Thumbs up. So journeying, what can I say? It's been quite the convoluted journey to sit here in front of you today. But really, in our understanding of things at this time, there's a lot of confusion in the world. You know, there's a lot of misunderstandings, I guess you'd say. How are we all going to live together and have a life that can be measured by some quantification other than do you have TikTok or Instagram, or are you basically paying attention to what's happening around you? So for us as a people, you know, we use the lodge and we bring everyone we can now, because it's kind of on everyone to make that journey. If you want to go make a connection to Earth, you have to go into the lodge. You have to sit with us, because we have the protocols and we've been doing them a long, long time. We haven't changed them in, I think the song's maybe 15,000 years old, something like that, but we haven't changed them. You know, they have to be presented to the youth in the same way and learned the same way. And it always works that way. So we say there are certain things on this earth that can't be changed, you know, or you shouldn't change them. If they work, then keep doing them that way. Use those tools as a way to explore your own inner self, who you really are. You all came here at this time, you know, everyone would say, why is everything so dramatic now that I'm on the earth? Well, we believe you're here for that reason. You know, for whatever this big ball of confusion is, each of you has a statement, a life path, something within you that you have to bring forward so the rest of us can benefit basically from your inner searching for that understanding of who you are and how you stand in relationship to everything else. So, going into prison, how did I get all of these things to happen? How did I become Sun Dancer and these sorts of things? They kind of happen to you because you start the journey, right? If you're getting ready to start on a path, you know, and you think you need a teacher, maybe that teacher will come. And we always have these expectations of what am I going to benefit or what is it going to bring to me? And in our ways, very little. You won't get a lot of recognition, you won't get attention, no matter if you're the most important one doing the ceremony. You're still going to be thought of as just another ikchiu ichasha, sort of like a dirt person. You know, you're made from the dirt, you go back to the dirt. There's not a lot of, there's not a lot of beauty in that, other than I think it's all beautiful once you get the right perspective. That you realize things do have to end. You know, we can't have continuous growth forever. And at this time, you know, we have schisms between the Chinese people, the American people, the Russian people, the Ukrainian people. So it's playing out in front of you. I mean, I think you can all see that. And I guess the question is, what are you going to do? You know, what's the next steps for all of us as a people to move forward and teach the young people to be more introspective, I guess is the word, you know, looking within yourself to see what provides the foundation for your next steps. Total honesty is the first thing, right? And that's a tough one. You know, none of us really want to be completely honest, even to ourselves. I'm always lying to myself that I'm still okay. You know, I'm a good-looking guy at an old man's age. And I'm like, gee, we never lose that. So myself, I believe we're like 5 years old, you know, and we stay that age. We may age physically, but mentally within yourself, you're always that five-year-old child. So be nice to each other, one of the elders said. Stop being mean, everyone. You know, look within yourself. There's a lot of meanness we're all feeling, but we don't need to be mean. We can be nice. It's really easy. In fact, it feels good after a while when you're just nice all the time. It'll make sense to you, you know, that whatever anger you feel or confusion on the inside, then we have to deal with it ourselves. We can't go looking for someone to fix it for us. You know, we have to start beginning to develop the tools within ourselves to analyze what are our next steps, what are our next projects as human beings to accomplish a more cohesive, more embracing culture that allows everyone to be different and kind of treasures that we're all different, that none of us are exactly the same. So I'm going to take questions today because that's my first thought, you know, is what do you want to know? You know, anyone raise your hand or however you want to do it. If you have a question, ask me. I'll tell you the best I know. No questions? Impossible.
What's been your biggest learning working in the prison?
That they're human beings like us, you know, and they're basically very damaged and very hurt. And I could be just like them, or you could, you know, it'd be easy for any of us to be in the same position they're all in. They didn't see it coming that they were going to go to prison. A lot of other people around them saw it coming, but they didn't themselves see the danger that they were in, that they would end up in a place where we reduce you to a number and then take away your individuality. And you have to conform. You have to wear the same thing as everyone else. You can't wear anything specifically to you. You know, it always has to be something that matches whatever we consider the security parameters of the institution, safety and security. So we use that as an excuse to limit their expression. You know, they have to, and they have to do what we tell them, you know, or they have to follow the plan we have for them of this is your program, your CBI. I'm not sure all these programs were developed, most of them in Los Angeles, but they're based on someone's idea of what it is to be an inmate. And then how would you help a person who was an inmate in meeting them on a level playing field? So is it successful? It's better than what was. You know, we're succeeding a little more, I think, because we have a lot more programs where the guys realize it's just like any of us who have a intuition, and then we have a small piece of enlightenment come off, you know, like a light in our head. Wow, you know, I should have seen that. I should have been paying attention. I should have known. But in there, their manipulation skills are masterful, because if you're in life and you're doing things wrong, you have to make excuses and you have to learn to lie really well. So you have to be convincing. So you become a master manipulator. You manipulate the reality around you to get to the places you want to go. But we're doing ISUD now, which is substance use disorder treatment. So you actually medicate the person, give them the thing that they think they're really craving, and then allow them to create new pathways for themselves without the drug being the constant barrier to setting it aside and doing something else with your intelligence. More? Okay. Yes, sir.
What would you recommend? You mentioned sharing what each individual has to share with life, paraphrasing a little bit.
Mm.
What would you recommend to further discover that purpose?
I think first thing you have to do is go make a relationship to Earth, you know, and we say that relationship has to be your first idea is that you're way greater than all the things you see, but you're kind of disappointing your true reality because they have far more things that they visual and see of this universe and the world than we do. So if you can emulate them or become open to the idea, you can begin to see that there's a connection there between all this creation, between all what we believe about intelligence and about what cognizance is and what reality is. So we say, you know, the insects, the animals, they all have a direct connection, and their ways of seeing and feeling are far different from ours. So we've just believed we're superior somewhat to that intelligence. But Earth's been around for millions of years and it's been doing this. So I kind of would put my money on Earth that there's probably way more that we could learn just by allowing ourselves to open up to being aware of that awareness. There's always an awareness going on. All the creatures around you are aware. They see these changes coming, you know, they change their behaviors. So maybe we should learn to see when those behaviors change. What are they prognosticating? What are they trying to, you know, reveal to us about what's coming? Is that enough or another question?
Right there.
Peter.
Go ahead, Peter. Can you hear me?
Okay, there, I unmuted. Thank you, John, for being here. And I wish I could be up there in person with you at Jikoji. I think Highway 9 is still closed between Santa Cruz and Skyline Boulevard. And otherwise, I would have been sitting there in the familiar Zendo. Yesterday, I spent about 4 hours with my grandson at Pleasant Valley State Prison, where he's been for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. A gang-related homicide when he was a teenager. He's hopefully, if things go well, he'll be out in a couple of years. I was wondering what wisdom you might have for me, for he and I together. I'm his main connection to the outside. Mm-hmm. What can we do in the next years to help him get ready for this transition, because he was just a kid when he went in. He doesn't know what it's like to live out here. Thank you for taking the time with that question.
You're welcome. My suggestion is, first thing is to get involved in the process, because there's it'll probably be a local process, probably be a probation department you'll have to deal with instead of parole from the state. So you want to go get to know those folks. Go make them so that he knows assigned a probation officer, that you guys have a relationship with that person, and make it an open, honest one, you know, so that they feel comfortable, because the first thing is always you have to establish trust. And it's not easy, because anything you do, we'll say, is an aberrant possible behavior. So we'll try to keep you in the loop. But if you begin to see that you're the one responsible to always explain whatever it is you plan to do, and wherever you're planning to go, it's kind of going to be a little bit onerous that way, but eventually you'll see there's a relationship developing between the person that's overseeing your, is it your nephew?
Grandson.
Well, so I think you should probably be there and try to develop a relationship yourself with those individuals that will be representing the county. And as for him, we'd have to see when he gets out what he wants to do, what his feelings are, you know, what he would like to change in his life path, how he would like to become the person he should be becoming at this time.
Thank you very much.
Very welcome.
And I hope to meet you in person.
You can get my number from Doug, and then I'll explain more about the inner workings to you when he gets close to parole.
Great. I look forward to that.
Okay.
What you said about being children inside adult bodies, What is it about 5 year-olds that you think?
I guess I just think of it as in 5 year increments, you know, from 0 to 5, we say that's kindergarten age, right? That's the age we start taking kids and saying we're gonna incorporate you into the society at this time. This will be your base lesson plan. But, and then at 10, you know, you're a little bit more mature and you're almost to the age when you think you're gonna be going to the big kids school. You know, that's quite daunting to young people. But about 15, you know, you completely change again and become what we would say is the base role model for your adult self. About 20, you're freed. You know, you have to make all your own decisions and you're held accountable for them all. But I don't think there's very many folks I know that are in their 20s that make great decisions all the time for how their life path should go. And so we say every 5 years, you take an accountability of yourself, you know, that there's going to be a major change in your life path. Whatever you've learned, you'll realize 5 years later down the road, was that a really good thing or was it not so great? You won't know until then. But you're always going to find, we say, you have to mark those things, you know, for the kids, for the girls, we mark their age, that we say they're not girls anymore, they're women now. And you have to treat them as in a different way than you did before, because a girl and a woman, it's a different, completely different story. So acknowledging that in front of the people empowers the girl to feel like, you know, I have authority. I'm not just a girl anymore. I'm a woman. So her words have to be listened to and paid attention to. But we have a matriarchal society. So, you know, that's different from everything you've learned and grown up with. It's all been paternalistic for a while. But, you know, in our society, the child takes the mother's name. So that would be quite the change for everyone if everyone was known by the mother's name, and the women owned and controlled all the property. So kind of takes everything away from us, you know. Men like to control things, but in that way we were kept in check by the ladies. They decided if you were not the man they thought you were, they put your shoes outside the teepee. And that was all you took with you. You walked away with your shoes, you know. You didn't take all the stuff you'd gotten and your horse. Maybe they might leave you your horse, but that'd be about it. So you might have to think twice about leaving her, you know. It's going to be a rougher road. And you, lady.
So you're a chaplain in the prison.
Yeah.
And I have a.
But they call me a Native American spiritual leader. That's a state title. It's California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, California Healthcare Facility, Native American spiritual leader. That's my classification. But it's a chaplain, all the others, the rabbis, everyone is still a chaplain, but they are a rabbi or an imam or whoever they are.
I have a picture of what that means, but it's probably based in television and movies. So I was wondering if you could say what that means. Do you meet with people one-on-one? Do you have a group gathering?
I run program. In the state of California, we all run programs. See, I'm not sure all of you know this, but the first thing that you pay for in California on your line budget items is CDCR. And it runs about $11.5 billion now, but you don't get told that. No one really knows that, hey, we pay almost $12 billion out the gate every year. That money goes to the officers and all of the logistics of running those institutions. We're dropping the number now. I think there's only 98,000 people in prison now in California. It was like 106 about a year ago. So there's a lot of guys, a lot of folks out there, a lot of ladies. They're coming out of the prison into the main street. So you guys will be meeting up with them soon, I'm sure. You know? And my idea is always just be honest, you know. Hey, you just get out of prison? You're looking for something to eat? What's going on? You know, what are you doing? So I don't know. It's kind of confusing to me. We built a prison, $1.5 billion. We pay $300 million a year to pay the people who run it. And we have maybe 2,300, maybe 2,400 inmates. But really what we built the facility for is so that the old people that we put in prison for life have a place to die. It's basically a hospice, a giant hospice. We have a palliative care in it at this time. We have CMF as well. That's a California medical facility, which has been around since the 60s. So that's the original prison hospital, but it was mainly for the mental health, right? So what this one is we have imaging. We have RTs, recreational therapists, which would be art therapist, recreational therapist. They have psychologist. There's a psychiatrist who oversees the program. So we kind of took a state hospital and we put a state hospital together with a regular hospital and then another yard of just dorms. And we have an EOP building, which when I say EOP means enhanced outpatient. It's like a giant castle and there's like 1,020 guys that live in there, you know, that are all EOP people basically. So they're under treatment, but it's enhanced outpatient treatment. So it's the only thing in the world like it, I think, at this time. You know, there's nothing else that I know of in the world that they have this huge complex that they're doing these things with the inmates. But anyway, if you want any questions about work, go ahead, ask me, I'll tell you. Oh, hand raised. Ben? Shishin? Ben?
Thank you for being here. So I'm referring back to your statement about other people recognizing that you're on a dangerous path. Is there any way that you can recognize yourself that you're going in that direction onto that path?
Thank you for the question. I think some kind of a inventory, but unless it's really an honest inventory, then we're really going to be in the same place, aren't we? So I think maybe reflection, you know, on somebody who is an ally or asset to us, someone that may have that true, what I call a true friend. A true friend's really going to tell you how badly you're doing, not just how well you're doing, but how badly. And most of us don't like to hear bad things about ourselves, but truthfully, I think we're all just stumbling along, guys. You know, there's no correct path that I see that everyone can follow to get to some kind of an intellectual or what would I call it, an enlightenment place within themselves. I think we just keep on plugging away day by day, taking that inventory in the morning, changing the behaviors we can, and recognize them at all times, you know, looking for yourself instead of having someone else tell you about your behavior. Try to be introspective a little, you know, and look at your own behaviors and examine them yourself. You can see within your own mind better than probably anyone else can. So I think that would be the first step. First step for me is you take sage and you bless yourself and you make your connection to the creation, which we would say you visualize maybe. You know, we say there's four directions, which I guess in the biblical sense would be the four cardinal directions, those angels that hold up the four directions of the creation. And the universe itself, which we think of as, it's a collective. So it's all things. You're related to everything. But you just don't see the relationship unless you have a cultivation of wisdom of some kind, you know, and have to cultivate something to begin to understand that everything else knows what to do and how to be. A wolf never wonders what a wolf needs to be. It always knows. But you as human beings are malleable. You're kind of like able to recreate yourselves at any time. But are you enamored of your creation, or is it something that's serving the people? For us, it should always be serving. If you're serving, you're basically, you're going to find something there. For us, we say it's like a medicine for yourself, because you have to get out of your mind and you have to look at others and empathize with them and see what's needed and provide it, you know, whatever, in whatever way you can, you know, if it's some kind of kind word or something, they need some money to buy something, unless if it's for their success in life, that's one thing. If it's something they really don't need, you'll know that. So as far as looking and seeing where the danger comes, brother, I think that's the biggest question we've all had. You know, are we always aware of our dysfunctional selves? And what is that? What does it look like? What does it look like when we're dysfunctional to ourselves? So I work on it all the time. Functionality, you know, getting here on time. I didn't do it. Okay. Bottom line, that's just the way it was, but I sure enjoyed the ride. And coming up to your guys' place, there was three deer that came down the trail and they ran across it to my left. So what does that mean? Anyone got an idea? I don't know either. So I'm just asking, does anyone have an idea?
You came at the right time.
There you go. That's what I thought. You know, I said, hey, they told me it's okay. Then they ran and then they stopped and they all stood in a circle and watched me. And I said, what? Nice place you have here. Really nice. That was a good thing. Yes, sir.
So I kind of have a sense of what you're
proselytizing. Yeah.
Is, but you know, I look at something like, say, the way some of the Native Americans were treated in Minnesota, like they had
the, you chased us all out of Minnesota. Right. You remember? Well, I mean, we were walking down the road. These guys were throwing rocks, hitting us with sticks.
Well,
just, yeah, let you know, I remember.
Yeah. And
because you had gold in a building and you didn't want us to have it.
Exactly.
That's all it was.
Well, we didn't.
Us red people did not deserve that gold. Only you deserved it. It was supposed to be paid in lieu of all the land that was given to the people in Minnesota. So we eventually said, we're starving. We want our gold. And they said, no, we're not going to give it to you. And then five young men lost their head, went and attacked a family, killed the family, attacked four more families, killed those families. And then the chief at that time told him, he said, you know, you guys think that I don't want to fight with the white people. He said, it's not the question. He said, it's not about my bravery or my courage. He said, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. He said, they're going to come for you. He said, like they come for the wolves or any animal that offends them, and there'll be thousands of them. He said, and whatever it takes, however long, middle of winter, whenever, they're going to hunt you down, all of you, and they're going to basically take your lives. He was shot gathering berries by a farmer about a year after he said that statement. But he was gathering berries. I don't think that that was offensive, but the farmer felt offended that he was on his land. So, but the point is, that sort of thing, they were all chased out and allowed back in, but not as many. So the smallest bands of Shakopees, you know, and everybody knows the Shakopee story, which is kind of like, I think there's only 300 of them. They give their kids 1.2 million, but hold it for them till they're 25. And they have to get their degree, some kind of degree, it doesn't matter, whatever they want to get. And then they're allowed to have their money. But they're in the Twin Cities, right? Minneapolis, St. Paul. So they're very wealthy. And
Yeah,
they had a casino. Yeah. They got a big casino. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes quite a bit of money. $27 billion in 2019 was how much the native casinos made in revenue. But everyone thinks they get that all. They don't. It's 80% of it goes to Las Vegas, you know, because Las Vegas is still, the mafia still controls it all. You know, they still get all the money. All the people who work in the casinos are trained in Las Vegas. All the machines come from Las Vegas. Anything you want to have fixed on those machines has to come from Las Vegas. So, you know, that's another rabbit hole. We'll go down some other time, I think, if you want to.
Well, my question is more about those five guys that they see, like they see that their tribe made a contract or signed a treaty and mm-hmm. that it's not being fulfilled. And they get pissed off.
Right.
And then it's like, no matter what they do, like you said, they're going to be hunted. And I would imagine there's a lot of people in prison who feel like, you know, if I get out, I'm going to be pulled over for some BS and then mm-hmm. I'm going to be back in. So how do you help them work their sense of like, no matter what I do, you know, because you're talking about being, you know, like how am I in danger and like, how do you balance that between seeing like, and I'm sure you, or maybe you don't, but I would imagine you run into people who feel like no matter what I do, it's just, they're going to distort it. And
karma, bro, come on. It's got to be karma. You know, it's all it is. It's karma. So if you're going to establish good karma after you've been establishing bad karma your whole life, it's going to take a minute before you're going to get an effect, right? It's going to take a sec, because we know that all those negative actions, you know, you're going to have to compensate for them. You're going to have to create the good karma. And if you've been 20 years doing bad karma, I think it's going to be a minute before you're going to get good karma. So the cop's still going to stop you, but you're going to have to, what are we saying there? Suck it up and tell him, you know, I'm sorry, officer, whatever I did, you know, and let me keep my hands in front of you. So, you know, you're not concerned or you're not worried. It takes you reversing that situation to where you're not going to get offended because you're being persecuted, because you put that on yourself already. You're the one who put the tattoos and did the things and the deeds that put you in that situation. So accountability, once again, they have to realize this is the situation now. You're always going to face that subtle form of prejudice. But the young people love these guys. You've got to understand there's some fame involved in that. Somebody with a lot of tattoos that's done time in prison is attractive. I mean, I'm just saying, it's true. I'll tell you now that there's a lot of ladies that fall in love with these guys while they're in prison and marry them. And, you know, they probably have more wives than we do. But still manipulation. And if that's their course, then I think they're always going to face that, where someone's persecuting them without cause, basically. You know, like the man who was killed by the five officers, right? They were black. Why did they kill him? What do you think?
I mean, they must have been provoked, but I mean, yeah, I haven't really followed it. It's just too depressing, you know? Mm. I mean, I'm following it for a while, and it was just like, the more you dig, the more it just seems, you know, like you're saying, that chief is saying, okay, you know, chill out.
And yeah, then he's telling what's going to happen. You know, this is going to be your results. You guys don't see it coming, but if we wait and look in the future, they're going to come for you.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, it just seems like these things are set up to cause problems.
Well, any inmate that goes into the system, I tell them, hey, there's a flow chart I can show you. It has 110 organizations that base their revenue off of the institution. So basically, that's a big flow chart. And once you're in it, it's really hard to get out of it completely. But that's the consequence for your action. And I guess the only way I can say it is, I've seen them get released when they change, okay? I've seen the karma of themselves open the door for their freedom. But it does take a real commitment on their part to follow through, because they're, I wouldn't call them exceptional people, but in a lot of ways, some of our natives, you know, that go in there a lot, they would say things like, I think they're the only traditional Indians we have left, the ones in prison, because they just won't do it right. You know, they won't listen. They're just going to be stubborn and do things the way they think they want to do them. But at the same time, we realize too that there's a lot of things we have to take account right now of how are we going to keep moving forward as a nation and then as a world, because we don't have a whole bunch of time, 8 billion of us. I don't know. What's first steps? First steps, I think, is youth. Mm-hmm. Go to the youth and explain the situation and be really honest this time, you know, instead of telling them, well, you know, you have to understand there were problems and we made mistakes. And because I think they have the potential to, they're really fast in the thank you. One more. Oh, go ahead, tell him.
Chris, go
excuse
ahead.
Excuse me.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for your talk. Let's see. Well, first, yesterday I had 3 deer in my garden, guilty looking deer. And the only thing it told me is that they're trying to nibble on my fruit trees, but they left willingly. So anyway, thanks. I really like what you said about self-inquiry, the importance of that, honest self-inquiry, and having somebody that's just willing to tell you when you're not being honest with yourself, that's willing to tell you that, somebody that you can trust. That's so important, I think, especially for people in that situation. So I'm just curious, from your experience working in prisons, what types or type of prison reform would you recommend? It seems like we keep trying different things and the situation, well, it either gets worse or it gets moved from one place to the other, from maybe inside the prisons to the streets, and nothing really seems to improve on a humanity level. I was just wondering what recommendations you'd have for public policy on the criminal justice system.
Well, that'd be way past my pay grade. But my suggestion would be that we have them do outreach, and mainly toward the youth, and they do the interventions. You know, it helps a lot to have someone who's really been there to explain to you why you really don't want to go there. The truth of it, because it's kind of glamorous in a way that, you know, people who are in prison, we're intrigued by the, I think we all are in a sense, because we like positive things, but negative things are attractive too. Otherwise WWE wrestling wouldn't be on, or I don't even know if it's that anymore, but there's a lot of things out there that are entertainment value. But inmates, once they have a change of heart, that's a powerful voice for change, you know, within, any group of people, I think, because they have to do the work. They have to do the work to help themselves, change themselves, be more introspective, accountability, responsibility, less excuses, you know, more honesty with your inner talk, what I call well, because look, you know, I know you guys know this, 100,000 thoughts a day, 80% of them negative. So there's a large dialogue going on. You have to fight all the time. You have to tell yourself, no, the world's not going to heck in a handbasket, right? It's going to be all right. We're going to fix this. So
I'd like to ask something here. One warden that spoke to us chaplain volunteers once mentioned that the mantra in Sacramento at the CDCR is prisoners today, neighbors tomorrow. And you talked about 98,000 people in the state mm-hmm. prisons today. Mm-hmm. Probably at least half of them will probably come out.
Oh, at least. No, more like 80%.
80%? And here's this, you said $1 billion or $10 billion industry of prisons.
Oh, it's 11 billion. 11 billion plus extra money that goes in, but that goes under federal government and others donate too.
So that goes to 100 different agencies or organizations that are affiliated with the prisons, but these men come out and there's practically nothing.
Well,
there are some things, but
there is a change going on there where they get the $200 gate money, but they're talking now about doing a federal kind of program. The federal program, they pay those guys minimum wage, $7 an hour, whatever job they do in the prison. They get half the money to spend while they're in, and the other half is put into an account that they get when they leave. So they have $30,000-$40,000, you know, it's ready to go when they're ready to leave. So they can get an apartment, they can get a car, they can take care of themselves. State of California, we give them $200 at the gate, and they go wherever, whoever their family is. And usually most of them have burned their families out, so they have nowhere to go. And $200, so you go back to the street, and what are you doing on the street? You were slinging drugs? Well, looks like you're going to have to go back to business, you know. So maybe journeyman kind of situation, something where they come out and they already have these sorts of certifications so that they can instantly go make $20, $30 an hour. Caltrans, that's why everyone sees the Caltrans workers. A lot of those guys are former inmates. They hire them more than they do most of your other public employees. Several of the, what we're really trying to do is say, they can be just like us, but we have to have honesty from them. They have to be accountable. They have to at least tell us the truth when we talk to them. They can't lie to us or be doing other things, you know, because that's their history. So can we be absolutely sure? Never. You know, but do they put now monitors on most of the guys that get out that have certain kind of charges? Yes. You know, so they have GPS on a lot of them. So all the guys you see standing there in the line, there's some that are wearing ankle monitor. A lot of folks are wearing ankle monitor now, but it's one of the parole officers will have a computer program so he can see where all of his where he's been every day, basically. So if you step out a certain area, you're going to get questioned. Where did you go? Why did you leave? You know, you have to get permission to do that. So that's the formula they have going at this time. And we're increasing the ISUD program. And that's one of the main reasons that they went in the first place. But as far as the societal factors behind all of it, I mean, until we have some kind of reckoning there, then I think we're always going to end up with this situation of people who are marginalized or minimized in our society. And so what is the pathway to being a criminal? Do you have to be raised in Compton? Will that make your path to prison quicker or faster? Probably. You know, I'll just say Compton's a rough place. But do these people have to be in gangs to survive in Los Angeles? Yeah, a lot of them do. You know, if you've ever been in those neighborhoods, you would definitely know what they were talking about. But can I make them all soft and cuddly? I don't think so. You know, there's pretty big guys, lots of muscles, strong guys. And their hearts, they're just like kids too, you know. They're angry. They're always angry. And they change us probably more than we change them, bottom line. But if you have a heart to do it, and show in and volunteer, and show these guys there's people out here that care, that we do want to go in there and help them, that we're not afraid of their circumstances. And because I was a volunteer for 10 years before I went in to take one of the positions, they asked me the whole time, you know, would you do this? But I knew as soon as what happens with CDCR, as soon as you become part of it, it limits you on your ability to do the things you feel you have to do, you know, you should be doing to benefit these guys. I just say sweat lodge, you know, for most of my natives, it's take them in the lodge and I'll know how they're doing, you know, it'll give me a feeling about them. I don't know if I can explain to you why that is, but some of these old things are still real for us. And we learn things in there. See, in the old days, the people who were chosen for spirit, they had they had to have vision. You kind of get picked. It's not something you just say, okay, I'm gonna prepare myself and when I'm ready, this will come to me. No, they get picked by Creator. And when they're picked, their job is to always remind the people that spiritual, what they can't see is important. The parts of things you cannot see are very important. Your relationship to everything that's around you is important. And you have to make that connection yourself. Nobody can stand instead for you and put you in that position. I'm not saying anything against the Catholic Church, but we just don't think there's any way to have an intercessor between you and your actions, you know? So we don't agree with that one. But for us, it's always personal. It's always something within yourself. You know who you are. And when you know who you are, you know how you have to act in every given situation. It's not hard anymore. You know, coming today, I could feel a lot of energy from you guys, you know, just this nervous kind of energy all us human beings have, right? You were giving it to me. So we were in like a feedback loop lockdown. I could just feel everyone's, I was like, wonder what they really want to know in there anyway, you know, but I don't think we're really questioning what do we want to know. It's just, what are we doing, you know, and how do we become closer to ourselves, closer to Earth, closer to the people around us, you know. We're not such strangers, only just for this minute, you know, unless we want to remain so. And that's our conscious decision at that time. But you're on your own life path, you know, and I always think to myself, it's good to meet all of you. Thank you for being here today. I appreciate all of you. And I think we should take a break.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.